That's for my crazy day. My packed commute. All those unread emails in my inbox. But I'm getting stronger, faster, and pushing myself further every day. I don't care if I'm not like everyone else. This punching bag is the best way to end my day.
Fearless is knowing yoga isn't your style. That's the power of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Federal Employee Program. Learn more about our healthy benefits at fepblue.org/getmore.
You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hi, and welcome to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I am Grant Goldberg, alongside Spike Freeman. Once again, Spike, how are you doing? It's our fifth show. What's up?
Well, it's the big fifth anniversary show. I believe that's the wood anniversary. I'm not 100% sure, but I didn't get you any wood. That's a horrifying sentence
it'll be out loud. Kind of like the iPhone commercial where the guy is like dating this girl for 34 days and like he gets her an iPhone and he gets himself an iPhone from her. So I'll go out and get myself from you.
Great. Perfect. Right. Oh, yeah. Wood is the fifth anniversary gift. I just Googled it and I was correct with my trivia. So that's a great start to the show.
All right. Yeah. You are officially our in podcast fact checker. But bigger news, this podcast is brought to you by xbet.ag. Make sure you use the promo code XBET to get up to a 100% bonus on your first deposit. And even bigger news than that, we've got our first guest today, Danny Kelly of The Ringer. Danny, we're happy to have you join us. How are you doing today?
I am doing excellent, you guys. How are you guys doing?
Still good.
Having heard what Spike had to say earlier, I'm a little frazzled right now, but I can move past that.
You might be able to hear me laughing in the background of that. I don't know if my mic was hot or not, but yeah.
Well, most of the time, everybody's laughing at Spike, so...
Danny obviously ran field goals for years upon years, is a master of analyzing football tactics, roster construction, great writer. It's great to have you on, Danny. Before we dive into asking you some nitty-gritty stuff, how are you feeling about the season so far for the Seahawks?
I feel like it's a little bit par for the course, just in terms of being a Seahawks fan. You know, the beginning of the season is always just like agonizing and terrible, and everyone starts to freak out and it's terrible football, and it really makes you start to hate football even. By around week eight, I'm guessing I'll probably be happier and enjoying it and happy to be a football fan and all that. But right now it's it's just ugly. Obviously the second half of that Colts game kind of like allays some of the fears that they're terrible in all this, and hopefully that is an indication of things to come. But the Colts are bad, and it was a primetime game, and in CenturyLink, and so those are caveats you have to pay attention to. I don't know how good the Seahawks are right now is what I'm saying. I don't think they're real. I don't have a ton of confidence in them yet. And now I wrote about it a couple of weeks ago. They're always a second half team, so you have to kind of just wait and see. And Pete Carroll will even probably He has a habit of telling us that it takes us a while, you just kind of have to tough it out kind of thing. And I'm in that tough it out mode right now. I'm just kind of man, when are they going to start looking good? We'll get into the details of kind of what's going on, but they haven't looked great yet.
I think that's a good transition into our first question. We've seen Russell Wilson kind of snap out of it and really get things going in the second half, and we're really waiting for the Seahawks to kind of do the same with the season, and I'm wondering what changes do the Seahawks have to make in order to become contenders once again in the NFC?
Well, the two things that I kind of look at so far that have really been, kind of their Achilles heel so far, it's one, I think that they need to get their pass rush going a little bit better. It's been kind of crazy that with that defensive line, Frank Clark, Michael Bennett, Cliff Averill, and now Sheldon Richardson, plus another, couple other guys that have been pretty good, Jaron Reed, and even Marcus Smith has been interesting. It just, I don't have the exact numbers off the top of my head, but I remember before the Colts game, the Seahawks, so through 3 weeks, they were, I think, like second to last or last in pressure rate. Which
I think
just,
it was 30th out of 32. So
there we go.
So a stunning third to last.
Right, third to last. So, I mean, it's just, it doesn't make any sense to me. I don't understand how that could be because, I mean, they're just so talented. They have the guys that can do it. I still believe they will pick that pass rush up, and I think that I don't think they're a bad pass rushing team. I think they just haven't figured out how to do it yet or whatever. So that to me is a huge key. I think that kind of is the biggest deal on defense for them, and kind of the same to flip it over to the offense. Like, so the pass rush for me is a big thing on defense. The big thing on offense is I don't really think they have an identity on offense. I mean, how would you describe the Seahawks offense? They don't run the ball.
I'll take this first if you're asking a question, but
go for it. Tell me. I don't know.
Well, yeah, we see them kind of sputter to start the game, like trying to get the run going, and then they kind of scrap that a little bit and try to air it out. So you have an identity crisis mid game, and so that just it sucks because you give yourself a slow start and then you're playing catch up for the rest of the game.
Yeah, and then they have to kind of do their thing where they go into the hurry up mode a little bit more. I don't think that I don't know if they're ever going to be like the type of run team that they really want to be because I mean obviously the offensive line has really struggled. Chris Carson's probably out for the season now at this point. I mean he might come back real late in the season, but we can't really count on that. I don't know what's going to happen with Eddie Lacy. He looked pretty good in the second half, to be honest, and that was really encouraging. But I don't know if that's indicative of just the Colts are really bad or, you know, whatever. So I don't know if they can be that physical run game without a healthy Rawls and I don't know what Lacy brings. I mean, are they going to just rely on McKissick instead and CJ Procise? Because those guys aren't physical backs. Those guys are, you know, space operating running backs. And so I don't know. I think the basic bottom line is I think they need to figure out what their identity is. And I don't know if it can be what they want it to be.
Yeah, and I think towards that question, on both sides of the line, you've got those, or in terms of the running game and the pass rush, you have huge injuries for the team now. And you mentioned Carson, and Averill is out until he can get the feeling in his hand back, which is just a scary metric for when a guy is going to be back. And so do you see the pieces on the roster? You mentioned Lacy and McKissick, but like, do you see the pieces on the roster to make the adjustments necessary to deal with those injuries?
I think on the defensive line, they definitely have the depth. I mean, that is a very good defensive line. We saw Marcus Smith kind of came out of nowhere last week, and that was really cool. Nazaire Jones has been really interesting as a rookie. Even Garrison Smith, I think, has been impressive, and Jaron Reed. Not to make light of the fact this guy got injured, but he put a guy on his back, you know, early on in the game. So there are some really, really good things from guys that you weren't really counting on to be like the horses. I mean, obviously Frank Clark can take over for Averill in the meantime, and Michael Bennett can play all over the line. Sheldon Richardson's very versatile as well. I think as long as they don't get more injured, which, you know, is always kind of the fear, but, you know, they can get through the Averill injury, and I think he'll be back eventually. I don't know what it was. He said it was like a really bad stinger or whatever. And hopefully, you know, it's nothing more serious than that. But I do think even if Averill misses extended time that they can deal with it just because Clark is still in there and they're getting some pretty good snaps out of Marcus Smith. So in the meantime, that's good. The offensive line, when you're down to your third, when you're down to your third tackle, left tackle, that's always a bad thing. I don't care what team you are. You know, they came into the year relying on George Fant. And when you really think about that, that's kind of hilarious that, you know, this is like we're really bummed about missing the guy that barely played football in his life.
Now we're bummed about the guy who was a third round guard who was backing him up.
So I don't know. But it sounds like Odhiambo's, it's not a heart bruise, which was the early report. It is just a sternum bruise. I mean, Pete Carroll kind of was like, yeah, somebody made that up, which I love.
Twitter doctors.
So hopefully Odhiambo will be back in the mix, though, to be honest. He hasn't been good. And I don't know, maybe that regardless of his injury, maybe they'll give Tobin a chance or I mean, I don't think we know anything about Isaiah Battle yet at this point, but they did trade for the guy or pick him up on waivers. I can't remember. Oh, no, they traded for him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's some potential there. I remember he was – people talked about him a lot kind of in the pre-draft process. He was a supplemental draft guy, and, you know, he's got, like – he's the prototype size and like, kind of look of a left tackle. So we'll see what happens, and, you know, maybe he could be a second-half surprise, but – I think Jokels played pretty well at left guard. I think Justin Britt, excuse me, is pretty good at center. And I don't know what we're getting from Ode Boucher yet, but it's probably better than Mark Golinski anyway.
Yeah, it's definitely been a minor upgrade, certainly, or an upgrade from a floor that was so low.
Yeah,
at three holding penalties on one drive, and I'm like, he's still better. Don't bring the other guy back in.
Yeah, I mean, the like Bushi had like a, he had like a, I don't even know what it was, clipping penalty or tripping penalty on like a screen pass to the left. I'm like, come on, dude.
you don't like him scissor kicking a guy 10 yards behind a play that is going successfully after actually landed his cut block and didn't pull a Riso Diombo and cut around the rusher.
I was gonna say it's like a staircase with two levels, and you're like halfway up, and you're like, well, you know, I wasn't where I was before, but I'm not where I need to be right now.
Yeah, and you just need to take a nap between like parking too.
So I don't know. It's I mean, it's that's NFL, that's football. You have to get through these. It's a battle of attrition, really. A season is, and I do think the Seahawks have pretty good depth at most positions. I'm obviously less, you know, confident in the offensive line, but we'll see. We'll see. I mean, they always kind of tend to get better as the year goes on. It is kind of a cliche, but I mean, it does matter to have like live blocking reps and live like not tackling, but like live cutting reps and all that and playing together. I think it does matter.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you mentioned depth real quick. We want to bring up something that's been a reoccurring theme on the podcast. Depth at the running back position, it has been, you know, really noted throughout the process. I mean, we lost Carson, so filling in for a backup, we saw him take back the fumble to the house. We saw him stiff arm a couple defenders, run through tacklers. Bobby Wagner, could he have some value at the running back position?
Man, that would be really fun. I think, didn't they say he was a high school running back too?
Yeah.
So, I mean, why not? No, it's probably a bad idea just because he's played so freaking amazing at middle linebacker, and I think that's important. You know, I think that was actually going to be kind of one of the other questions you guys had sent me before the show was one of the, you know, what are the most surprising things about this season so far? And I don't know if you want me to just keep the segue going or what, but...
Yeah, just roll with it, man. Yeah. This is going so well. Just keep it going.
Run with it like a Bobby Wagner fumble.
But yeah, that's been really surprising how bad the Seahawks run defense has been.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell is going on there, because that is actually one of the most like important things to Pete Carroll. It's like one of the things I have the most faith in him to do. Like, I mean, obviously you have a ton of faith in him as a defensive backs coach, and I think he knows his defense better than, you know, what anyone in the world, but for whatever reason, they haven't been able to stop the run. I don't know if that's just like getting new guys in there. I don't know who to blame for that, but it's been really weird.
I have two thoughts on that. One is that to both not have a pass rush and give up explosive runs feels wild to me, because like in the first half of that Tennessee game, they were shutting down the run so well, but then they weren't getting pressure on Mariota. And then the second half, they were just doing neither, which was weird. And the other question I have is something, It's Cam Chancellor. Like, I haven't seen much from him, but I also haven't done an all 22 just like staring at him. What have you seen out of Cam? Like, I have this like sneaking fear that he is like not all the way washed up, but like I'm like a little scared that he hasn't had an impact and we've had all these explosive runs against us. Have you seen anything positive or negative specifically from Cam this year?
I think that there's been I've noticed him a few times in a positive light in terms of coverage. You know, he's just kind of he's tasked with stopping some of these tight ends, and I think he's done a decent job. And I remember a couple times, I can't remember like a specific, but like, I'm like, oh, that was a good play by Chancellor. So I think in coverage, he's probably been fine. I haven't done a super in-depth all 22 on just Chancellor either, but there were a couple times, like I know the, I can't remember which run it was against Tennessee. There was a couple of that where he like missed a tackle or two in the same play. And it was just kind of like, what in the hell is going on? I don't think he's had the effect that we normally expect from Cam in terms of like the intimidator or the guy that everyone's really scared to throw in his area, kind of like how he was early on in his career. I think part of that is like they've, you know, there's a huge emphasis on getting some of those big hits out of the game, and that's good. I don't have any problem with that at all. But like that kind of, I guess, diminishes his value because he can't do that quite as much. So I don't know. That's a good question. Honestly, I don't know. It's been, I'll say this, he hasn't been that noticeable, which is, I guess, a bad thing.
Yeah. As opposed to a corner.
In coverage, when you're not really thinking of some guy or he's not coming up a lot, I mean, I think of that as a good thing, like a Richard Sherman type thing.
Right.
But,
right.
But when you see him miss multiple tackles on the same play or he lets Jack Doyle in front of him and he, it's eventually a drop, you look closer and it's a drop and you wonder, damn, like what's Cam doing? And
right.
So he's not, like Spike said, he's not like all the way washed, or we don't even know if he's washed, but he definitely might be going through that first cycle.
I just think it's like, if you can, when was the last time, and this is like a very scientific measure for how well he's played, when was the last time we saw him do the Bam Bam thing?
Yeah. You know, like it's a great, I feel like he had one, I don't know if he did it. He had one really good fourth down stop against Green Bay, I feel like. But that's week one, and it's week four. That's 3 weeks without a Bam Bam? No thanks.
We need to bring that back. Get it? Yeah, that's like Bam Bam's per game measurement. I think we need to get that going a little bit
higher. Can we get PFF tracking Bam Bam's per game, please?
Yeah, that's a new kind of analytic.
Yeah. We should probably pause for 1 second just to give our sponsors a chance to tell us about their great platform.
All right, guys, we have an exciting partnership to mention. We are teaming up with Pro Football Focus and giving away one PFF Edge membership a week. Now, to enter yourself in this giveaway, all you have to do, it's super easy, go to iTunes, leave a 5-star review, tell us why you like the show, or tell us something we can improve on, and leave your Twitter handle in the review, and each week, Locked On will pick a random winner for those that left the reviews.
PFF Edge has NFL player grades, snap counts, position ranks, all the info you need to know everything you need to know about sports. Put your iTunes review and you will win, or you won't win. We can't make any promises.
But we do want the winner to be a Seahawks fan, so go ahead and leave a review. Who doesn't like free stuff, too?
I like free stuff. Guys, did you watch Monday Night Football this week? Because I did, and there was one of the great moments in gambling history as the Chiefs returned a meaningless fumble for a touchdown to win, and not just win against the Redskins, but cover a crazy 7-point spread. Were you in on that action? I hope so, and if you weren't, you know that you got to be next week. Where are you going to do it? You're going to do it at xbet.ag. xbet.ag, one of the best gambling sites on the web. They have the cleanest and easiest to use website, great graphics, great mobile site, great options for in-game betting. They got it all. Okay, so the next time that there's a meaningless touchdown, make some money off of it. You can't do it if you're Grant's age because he's only 20, okay? But if you're my age, if you're in your 30s, Jesus, you can. Man. I know. Sign up today, xbet.ag. Promo code XBET. Get up to 100% bonus on your first deposit. Win big. Feel big emotional swings during Monday Night Football related to teams that you don't normally care about. XBET.ag, the newest and most exciting betting platform on the planet. All right, great. We are back with Locked On Seahawks with Danny Kelly of The Ringer. Danny, you wrote, and I tweeted at you about this, one of my favorite all-time pieces for field goals like 7 years ago about the Seahawks' quest to find a franchise quarterback back when Tavares Jackson and Charlie Whitehurst and J.P. Lossman were on the roster.
J.P. Lossman, wow.
Never forget J.P. Lossman.
Yeah.
Almost a Seahawk. And so I wanted to talk to you. Obviously, in the interim, we have found a franchise quarterback. And you had talked about churning the position, and that's something you need to do until you find a guy. And I've got questions both. How is Russ doing right now? There's obviously been a little up and down feelings about his early performance this year. And also, when and how do you think, once you've got a franchise quarterback, do you think about getting in that other potential guy who can be a player who's more impactful than, say, Austin Davis?
Yeah, well, I'll answer that question first. I don't think it hurts to invest in a backup, honestly. I think, you know, when John Schneider and Pete Carroll first came here, I remember Schneider said this, and he literally hasn't done it, but he was like, yeah, in Green Bay, we drafted a guy every year. We drafted a quarterback every year, and we're always developing and always looking at the position and all that. And then, you know, I think in whatever, how many years, how many drafts have they done, like six or seven?
Five. Yeah, it's been five since they've taken a quarterback, I believe. Maybe six.
I mean, they're not really living up to that. And I mean, he's mentioned like, oh, it's just kind of how the draft's gone, blah, blah, blah. But I don't think it'd be a bad thing for them to go ahead and, you know, if it's like a second or third rounder or whatever, if they see a guy that they really want to develop. I mean, we've seen a couple teams do it, and you can get first round picks out of it. You can get, you know, high second round picks out of it if the guy looks good and developed and you want to trade him for whatever. And so in the meantime, you have a good backup and all that. So I don't know. I don't have any problem with them kind of scouting the quarterback position. There's been talk on Twitter about potentially moving on from Russell Wilson. I don't think that's going to happen. I think they're committed to him fully, and it would be a huge mistake to do it, but to move on from him. But I'm all for.
The only way I think you could is if it was a Breeze Rivers situation where after like a couple years and an injury or so, you know.
Right, like a major injury. Yeah. Because I think Breeze had shoulder surgery, and there was some thought that he'd maybe never be the same, blah, blah, blah. And I think down the line, at some point, you're going to have to replace Russell Wilson, but he's still got plenty, you know, years in him, and I don't think they're going to move on from it, you know, anytime soon. So, we've seen teams without quarterbacks, it's just a struggle. And so I don't think Wilson's necessarily the main problem in the Seahawks offense. So, but then to your second point, you know, this year has been pretty weird, I think, for the offense, other than, you know, I guess flashes of really, really good play from Russell Wilson. It's been pretty ugly and pretty slow and disjointed and kind of weird. And, you know, I think the offense is a little bit different this year. I was talking to Kian Fay from ESPN yesterday about it, and he brought up the thought that, like, he noticed that the Seahawks are sort of doing this thing where they push the ball downfield quite a bit more than last year, it seems like, and they do these deep drop play action throws a lot more often. And it hadn't really occurred to me, but when I looked into the numbers, he was right that the so far, you know, through four games, it's obvious caveat compared to last year, but his average depth of target last year, Russell Wilson, was 9 yards. This year so far, it's 10.2 yards, and that's a pretty big disparity. When you're talking about, you know, how many passes they throw, that's a pretty big sample size. And then his accuracy percentage down 7% this year. Last year it was 77.2%. This year it's 70.1%. I think that's number one. He was pretty inaccurate to start the year. Like, he was overthrowing guys a lot, throwing high, and that was concerning. He seems to have cleaned that up quite a bit last week, which is encouraging, but it's something to watch. His accuracy has been down this year. Another thing that's really interesting, and I think this is another pretty major change. It doesn't sound like a lot, but it's pretty major. His time to throw in 2016 was 2.61 seconds, and this year so far it's 2.82 seconds. So, again, that doesn't sound like a lot, but it is kind of a lot. Like, they're doing more what they're doing is deep drops, play action. We've seen it a few times where, you know, they play action one way, and then Russell Wilson kind of just drops straight back like 5 or 10 yards or whatever and, like, looks for a deep shot. And so it seems like they're doing that kind of a lot more. so far, and that's a stat from the NFL website. And then completed air yards last year, so this is similar to average depth of target. So this is basically how deep he's throwing the ball. Last year it was 7.6 yards, this year it's 8.3. His intended air yards last year were 9.6, this year it's 10.5. So all the indications are he's throwing deeper down the field so far through four games, which I think is good. I mean, honestly, it's probably good. I do think that they need to have a better balance, and this is kind of, I think, one of the main issues with the offense so far is that they just don't have any rhythm. They'll find it every once in a while, but for the most part, it's kind of just like, I don't know, like they'll run on second and 10 and then have to like a third and 10, you know, and it just pisses me off.
It hasn't been great. And I wonder if, obviously in terms of like intermediate targets, Graham and Baldwin are really good at that.
Right.
And it sounds like, and they've been, I mean, aside from Jimmy Graham's, he's got three pretty catastrophic drops this year, which are not great, but, and Baldwin's been incredible when he's been on the field. And I wonder, and there have been moments where I've been watching and I feel like when the run game can't get going, it's like hit those guys,
right?
Especially Baldwin's been so reliable. And I wonder if that's sort of the rhythm. It's finding, maybe they're trying to open up intermediate routes by showing some more film. Like, what do you think is going on in terms of their long-term goals? Do you think this is a long-term shift, or do you think this is part of establishing a certain amount of tape so that at the end of the year, what they really want to get in terms of consistent production is there?
Yeah, that's a great question. I have no idea, like, what the plan. The plan, it doesn't seem apparent to me, honestly. And so, I mean, I think clearly those drops have been, impactful. It wasn't just Graham, too. There was a couple of drops early on in the year, like, that could have really changed the narrative about the Seahawks, I think. That, you know, I think Tanner McAvoy had a couple of big drops.
McAvoy, Procise, too, on the goal
Procise.
Line.
Yes, I mean, I think if those guys make those catches, and it wasn't like they're hard catches, really. I mean, the McAvoy catch in the end zone, I mean, that would have been like a pretty impressive catch, but it's something that he could, that's what you expect from your receivers, right? To like make that catch, take a hit, and score a touchdown. So I think, you know, if those guys make those catches, we could be talking about, like, it could be a completely different narrative about the Seahawks, honestly. And that's, I mean, I guess that's what I love about football. It's like, you know, there's so many of these plays throughout the season where it kind of just changes everything. But it also doesn't change anything because the Seahawks, are still, you know, a very, very talented team. I think that they still have, ton of potential this season. So my answer to that is I don't know, like, what the plan is. I think they're kind of just, you know, I don't know if this is a good term to use, but they're kind of just a schizophrenic team. Like, half the time they look completely just out of sorts and like don't know what the hell they're doing. And then half the time they're like, you know, like a Ferrari, like freaking well-oiled machine, just like moving down the field with ease. So I do think in a kind of, you know, even on a micro level, like Jimmy Graham is like the perfect example of that. Like, half the time he doesn't look that interested in like playing. And then he had like two big catches last week in the second half where you're like, holy shit, like this guy is dominant, you know, and he's just a beast. So I don't know. What the hell do you take from that? I don't know how you like, I don't know what version is going to show up at any given, you know, in any given game.
Yeah, yeah. It's always about, you know, I don't think it's ever been an issue of having talent on the team, like you were saying, but it's just execution and game planning and finding that rhythm that's been escaping them for most of the season. And you see them, you know, sputter to get the run game going, and then you see them hit a couple mid-level passes, and then the offense moves down the field like a hot knife through butter.
Yeah, it's strange. I don't know what to make of it. I think,
well, it's partly like matchups make fights, and our offensive line never matches up well. like there's no fight that we're going to be able to do plan A on. And so plan B, we've got all these awesome plan Bs, but they all, you know, they're a little higher variance maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, high variance is a better way to say it than schizophrenic. But Yeah, I think, well, number one, like, if we judged the Seahawks on last game, like, you got to feel really pretty good about how they're doing. I think the Rams this week will be a lot bigger test because, you know, number one, historically, they've really struggled against St. Louis and now L.A. And, you know, whether that was Jeff Fisher was making it a Super Bowl every year or what, like, this is a much better Rams team. And Todd Gurley's a really good player. And Jared Goff looks like a real player now. And, like, he could be, like, a franchise quarterback. I think it was, like, we all kind of, I don't know if, like, it's bad to root against a player, but, like, we all kind of had our hopes up that, like, haha, the Rams did it again.
Yeah.
But it is really fun to see the Rams, like, actually have sort of an identity. You know, obviously Sean McVay knows what he's doing. I think that's pretty clear at this point. He's designed an offense that makes it easier on Goff and has given him confidence, has given him that rhythm. And, you know, at the same time, like, it's like, why can't the Seahawks do that again? Like, I kind of just, it's I've gone back and forth on Bevel so many times over the last few years that I really honestly feel about him anymore. It's just like almost ambivalence. It's like, they're not going to make a change. So, like, just give me something good. Like, just finally figure it out. Like, figure out how to get into a rhythm consistently. But it's never going to happen.
I'm sorry, man.
Until, week 10.
So, the very last question we got for you, then we're going to let you go, is sort of two parts. One is, you're now a national football correspondent. Does that take away at all from the impact of each individual Seahawks game on your emotion? And second side of that, do you think the Seahawks can win the Super Bowl this year? And how much of that is driven by what is left of your emotion?
I will say, yeah, like, it, being when I was doing field goals for years, I think I did it for 5 years. You know, you're really invested in how that team does just because it kind of like affects the mood of your entire week. Like, later, it's like, oh God, like, they sucked. I'm going to have to be like complaining about them all week and going to have people like really fired up about it. And, like, you know, it's actually like a thing that impacts your life. Now it's not, you know, not nearly the same. I, you know, sometimes I barely even watch the games because I'm having to work on other articles and stuff like that, like on Sundays or whatever. So, like, for instance, on Sunday, I was kind of like half watching the game, not really. And, you know, it's hard to do after doing it for like 5 years where you're like, I need to like study this so like incredibly deeply. But at the same time, it's actually kind of liberating too. It's like, man, like, I don't have to be completely married to what happens in this game.
Yeah.
So it's it's nice. I think, you know, I'm still very like interested in how the Seahawks do. I'm still invested in them and, you know, want to see them do well. But at least I have, you know, avenues of, like, I can explore other teams if, you know, the Seahawks are being super frustrating like they always are in the beginning of the year. And then what was the second part of the question?
Do you think they're Super Bowl?
Oh, right.
Yes. No.
I think that they're still a talented enough team to be a Super Bowl contender. Right now, it doesn't really look like they are one, you know, obviously. And, you know, I think it could really go either way. I still think if they can get their defense figured out and, like, you know, clean up that run defense and get a pass rush going, I think they can play with anybody. And so, yeah, I think they are a Super Bowl contender, but I mean, it's just, this is kind of an obvious thing, but they just need to actually like perform like it. I think they have enough talent, I'll put it that way, to be one, but we need to actually see them, you know, start to put all the pieces together.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Danny. this is really great. And I'm glad that you still believe in us.
Absolutely.
It's important.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. That was fun. You know, I don't get to talk about the Seahawks in depth as much as I used to, so it's always fun to kind of like dig into it.
Yeah, this could be your preferred avenue of Seahawks discussion from here on out. Yeah. So whenever
I was doing like stat studies on the Seahawks and stuff, I don't always get to do that. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, whenever you want to just come on and talk about the Seahawks, you're more than welcome to join us.
All right, I'll take you guys up on that. Thanks.
Awesome, man. Thanks so much.
No problem.
I'm Grant Goldberg signing off with Locked On Seahawks. Thank you for listening. Please leave a 5-star review. Talk about us to your friends. Listen to us on Audio Boom. We've just applied to be on Stitcher. So wherever you listen to your podcast, let us know, and then we'll do our best to get it up on there.
Yeah, thank you so much to Danny. Thank you to XBet and PFF for being our sponsors. And tune in tomorrow for our preview of the Rams game, which is terrifying.
Yeah, it's not going to be fun. So,
nope.
Yeah.
Nope. And I'll be there live, and it's going to be awful.
Is democracy in danger or decline? Condoleezza Rice, William Galston, and Carlos Gutierrez and others take on this question in the fall edition of The Catalyst, a journal of ideas from the Bush Institute. Surveys show Americans place less trust in institutions like the media and business. Others contend America has faced far more challenging periods and emerged strong. Leading policymakers, Bush Institute experts, and respected journalists take on this debate. Read about it at bushcenter.org/catalyst.